Oh boy, you guys have heard this a million times now. I'm sitting here washing my potato and trying to teach other people to wash their potato too. So here we are, Tom and Ramon with the 100th Monkey. And boy, I'll tell you what, 2012 is really shaping up to be quite an amazing year. So far, there's been so much going on in the... Oh, geez, just look out your door. Turn on the news. Look at what's going on in the world. Things are moving, and things are moving fast. And indications from our history, the prophetic sense, all point to this being a great time of change. And, you know, I've always been a skeptic about prophecy in one sense or another. But I'll tell you what, looking at what's going on in the world today and comparing that to what we put down in words thousands and hundreds and however many years ago, I got to lend some credence to it, Ramon.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go right into some of the new stuff that I want to tap into really quickly. If you go to our Facebook 100th Monkey page, there's a picture I put up of a monkey, and I'll read this really quickly. Two blind persons wanted to drink water at the Ragiguda Temple in Bangalore. When they were unable to operate the tap, this mother monkey opened the tap for them, allowed them to drink water, drank some water herself, and then closed the tap, leaving the scene. Now, if that doesn't sound like a 100th Monkey effect to me, yeah. That was mind-boggling. I just dropped my jaw when I read that.
The consciousness that monkey has to have, the sentience it has to have to understand that there's two people that are incapable or having problems, and for the monkey to step up and help another being of a different race, you know, that's just amazing. That's just
Yeah, the empathy that you have to have. And also, really quick, brain wiring a no-brainer. Scans reveal astonishingly simple 3D grid structures. So that's in the news section. If you scroll down, you can link on that. And also, Tom put up alternative and or free energy systems. So you can link on that and check it out. And we have other news there.
Also, another thing I put on the page, the main page right at the top there, there's one of our listeners sent me some pictures that he's been taking a lot of pictures here in the last couple of years about the faces of the earth, the consciousness showing itself in things like landscape and the sky, the clouds. She's got just an amazing body of work of stuff that he's taken pictures of that, you know, I call them the in the clouds. I see what I term sylphs. You know, they form things in the clouds that are just too amazing to be just random cloud generation. You know, but this guy's got an amazing body of work that and I'm going to be digging more into what his material, and we'll be sharing that with you guys also. So there's he's put four YouTube videos up, and I put those on the main page there that you can take a look at. But you kind of have to you'll want to pause quite often going through those videos and really take a look at the scenes that are there to be able to pick up the faces and stuff that are in there. But it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Also, you can find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and again, just scroll down all the way to the bottom, and the links are there.
And also, Ramon's book is out.
Yay! Oh. Yeah, it's called Scratching the Cosmic Consciousness, and if you scroll down, again, the links are there. It's on Amazon and on Creative Space. You can either download it as a Kindle or order the book. And that would be highly appreciated. So, we have someone who's a paradigm breaker.
Yes, we do.
It's all about breaking paradigms.
Dr. Robert Gilbert has a multifaceted background in both spiritual and scientific studies. He's a former U.S. Marine Corps instructor in nuclear biological chemical warfare survival. Since leaving the service in 1985, he has conducted independent research into the geometric basis of modern science and new technologies. Dr. Gilbert is also a Rosicrucian with more than 20 years of experience in sacred geometry and its hidden uses by the world's greatest spiritual traditions. His non-sectarian approach is inclusive of individuals from all spiritual traditions. Dr. Gilbert holds a PhD in international studies and is a published academic author in that field, contributing to the first academic textbook in the new field of transformational politics. In 1997, Dr. Gilbert began for the first time to teach publicly the results of his two decades of intensive research. Today, he teaches both publicly and privately in Asheville, North Carolina. Dr. Gilbert also offers a small number of his Vesica series of special seminars through the United States every year. Dr. Gilbert, welcome to the 100th Monkey Radio.
Thank you very much.
Oh, this is I think I mentioned before we got started here, this is a field that, you know, it's been out on my periphery, and I really haven't jumped into this very much. But I'll tell you what, I see the potential here to really do some amazing things on this planet.
There's a tremendous amount inherent in this. This is a really ancient science dealing with the geometric basis of all existence, but modern science and technology has rediscovered a lot of the ancient knowledge and is applying it in a new way today. But it really gives us a opportunity to see the patterns everything is based on.
So to start off, let's get a little bit of background on you. What actually sparked your interest in this field?
Back in the early 80s, when I became a Marine Corps instructor in the nuclear, biological, chemical, warfare, defense, and survival field, I became aware of a lot of the new technologies that are really threatening human life and threatening human extinction with some of these weapons of mass destruction, particularly looking at the danger of radiation and just how radiation is in an increasing basis covering the planet, both with EMF pollution, electromagnetic field pollution, and from nuclear radiation. And as I was looking at this problem, one of the things that I found was that there was a series of publications not well known to the public that were paid for by governments and by organizations like NATO that examined natural systems, everything that we think about in biology, chemistry, and physics, on the terms of the pure geometric shape of the systems rather than complex algebraic equations. Most people I find have a kind of embedded trauma from high school math and get pushed away from advanced science because of the mathematical basis of it. But by looking at these types of publications that would study biological or chemical systems based purely on shape relationships, I realized any child could easily understand this basis for existence, and it made certain things very clear that get often hidden within the algebraic formulas. So I got very fascinated with these geometric relationships that everything is based on. And although some of these publications that I saw at that time are hard to find, there are things that are easy to find in the public realm, such as textbooks like General Chemistry by Linus Pauling. And if you get this kind of basic textbook by Linus Pauling in General Chemistry, you'll see in it all of these illustrations of the pure geometric form of all these different chemical compounds that life is based on, everything that makes up all the activity in our world. And I realized this was just a insight into the actual structure of everything in existence, and that then moved me into looking into classical knowledge of these types of patterns that all life is based on. And that then gets into the topic that we call popularly today sacred geometry. Sacred geometry really being the study of all of the patterns that all life and consciousness is based on, the structure behind everything. And every major spiritual tradition on the planet really teaches its initiates some aspect of this sacred geometry. And I began to find one-to-one relationships between the type of patterns being found in modern scientific research in biology, chemistry, and physics, and the knowledge that was taught in the ancient schools, whether it was the sacred geometry studied in India or in Egypt, or the great Greek sacred geometry and the patterns that they taught. And so I went very deep into looking at these relationships between the knowledge known and taught in these closed initiation circles in the different great spiritual traditions of the world, and how that previously hidden knowledge is being rediscovered in empirical research today in modern scientific research, and that that's actually transforming our world with our new technology. And so that really got me started on this whole thing.
Hmm. You know, the initiation practices really fascinate me, because I see a lot of people that are going through a form of initiation right now into, it seems like there's an energy on the planet now. Consciousness is growing, and it's creating a situation and a need for people to, for lack of a better word, evolve or grow. And I'm seeing that nature or people are naturally going through a self-imposed type of initiation without much guidance through it. And there's a lot of turmoil that's associated with those unguided type initiations. Now, are there basic, from what you've experienced in research, is there a basic pattern of initiation to consciousness that you have noted?
That's a great question. There are basic patterns of initiation taught by different schools, and there's a very interesting principle here, which is that there's a unified basis to all creation, all consciousness, and so there are certain fundamentals that every initiation system will teach and that will educate its initiates in. But at the same time, what I found is that different spiritual traditions in the world also had particular different focuses of their attention and would actually structure the subtle bodies of their initiates in somewhat different ways depending on the functions that they were emphasizing within that tradition. And so what you would find is that in one particular tradition, they might focus on the development of particular energy circuits or energy centers in the body more than others, but another tradition would focus elsewhere, depending on what was their particular larger function in the world. And one of the background concepts to this is this whole idea of the Hermetic tradition, that there's thousands of years of background here of different traditions around the world holding a piece of a much larger puzzle, as if there was an original type of knowledge or gnosis that at some time in the past got broken up into pieces, and different traditions got different pieces of that overall picture. The amazing thing we have today is that there are unprecedented releases of information from different traditions that you would never have been able to find publicly, sometimes just 20 or 30 years ago. So that very advanced information from Buddhist initiation, Chinese Taoist initiation, even things from somewhat defunct traditions such as in ancient Egypt and such, are becoming much more available today. And so learning about some of their advanced practices, how they go through a systematic method of changing the consciousness of people and changing their energetic systems and structuring their energy body in very particular ways, we have really unprecedented access to that information today. And one of the things that I've done with my work with the Vesica Institute in Asheville, North Carolina, and my research in general since leaving the Marine Corps, is to get a sense of this overview and to try to present in our courses the core ideas of what the different traditions are doing and what they're focusing on, and to give a sense of how it all fits together as a coherent picture.
Hmm. So the subtle body, how have we been able to measure changes? Is there some way we've been able to quantify the change, or is it objective at all, or is it all subjective?
It's really a combination of the two. What you'll find is that there are more and more technologies arising over the last, particularly 25 years, where researchers, particularly in Central Europe and increasingly in Russia and other countries, are developing technologies, machines, to be able to image the human energy system. And they can show aspects of this. But the real foundations of it, going back to the classical traditions, always come from developing the human being to become a higher organ of perception. And that by developing particular energy centers in the body, one can begin to start perceiving things that for most people are normally invisible. And that includes particular patterns in the human energy field, as well as the internal energy circuits within the body. And so there are, again, commonalities. Every particular tradition will have some knowledge of what we call the chakras and of energy circuits in the body. But again, different traditions will focus on different ways to structure the subtle body, because the structure of the energy in the body will lead directly to changes in consciousness. So a person who has highly developed the third eye center and the crown center, but not the lower chakras, will have a different state of consciousness and different functions available to them than a person whose base chakra and reproductive chakra, solar plexus chakra, has been very highly developed. And so what you'll find is that in some cases there are particular patterns that are focused on that are used in some traditions and not in others. But the foundation of it all is that there are certain points in the human energy body, whether it's imaged by an external technological device that has been developed or through direct perception or energetic sensitivity, that can be developed to develop the centers of energy into actual organs of perception and to perceive more and to have more access to both the universal information field as well as the universal field of life energy that surrounds us all and that sustains the life in the human body.
Now, how different or are they the same is harmonics and geometry? Because it seems like when you have the like those tests that they do with the sand or metals, where they play certain harmonics and you see geometric shapes.
The cymatics.
Thank
right.
you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a fascinating demonstration of the link between different types of qualitative energy systems in the world. So to address that, let me give a little bit of background here. In addition to the work that I've done in sacred geometry, when I began to look at all these teachings from the great spiritual traditions of the past and how they link up to modern science and technology as a view of all the patterns that come from higher realms to create our physical world, at a certain point in around the year 2000, I was giving a lecture on sacred geometry, and a person came up to me and asked, do you know who Dr. Ibrahim Karim is? And I said, no, I've never heard of him. And he said that he's a gentleman in Cairo, Egypt, who has developed a system called biogeometry, and that this biogeometry system really reveals a lot of the hidden principles behind the Egyptian temple science. And Dr. Karim has been able to do really remarkable things to apply specific types of energy movement patterns, geometric patterns, in such a way that it has profound healing effects. And he's demonstrated with the Egyptian National Research Center that he can change life functions within living beings through simple applications of geometric forms. And I thought, well, this sounds amazing. So I then found Dr. Karim, and I trained with him for several years. And long story short, I was lucky to become the first person outside of Egypt that he allowed to teach his work in biogeometry. I actually helped him to standardize the teaching into a replicatable standardized training. And the reason I bring that up at this juncture is because when we look at the whole issue of cymatics, cymatics is a body of work that was developed by Hans Jenny, who was a Swiss medical doctor who had actually trained under a great Rosicrucian teacher in Central Europe, who many people know of, named Rudolf Steiner. And in Hans Jenny's work, he was looking at the way that vibratory forces, what we think of today as vibrational medicine, vibrational science, he was looking at this in the early part of the last century, and he created a system based on even earlier research where he would have a light powder, like lycopodium powder, on a steel plate, on some type of flexible membrane, and they would play a sound or a tone into that membrane, or they may simply have a person tone a sound into it, and you can then see the powder form up into specific geometries based on the sound or the tone that is emitted. And this, of course, is actually a very ancient concept. If you study the Indian spiritual system, one of their fundamental concepts of initiation is that what we call their mantras, or their sounds of power, they say in that system that those sounds of power are directly related to specific geometric forms that they call yantras. And so, very famously, the seed syllable of creation, which is Om, they say that when Om is heard as a sound, it sounds like Om, but if you were to see the exact same vibratory force as an image or in matter, it would appear as what they call the Sri Yantra, a very particular geometric form that many people have seen. So what they did with cymatics is they're able to demonstrate the way that vibratory forces in sound can directly translate into something in geometric shape or in form. And again, a classical concept in the Indian work. Anyway, my friend Dr. Ibram Karim in Cairo with his biogeometry system has really created a new science with biogeometry that puts a lot of pieces together. And he calls one part of it the physics of quality. And in the physics of quality, he's able to demonstrate that there is a identifiable spectrum of all the different qualities of energy that we think of in terms of life force or vital energy, what they might call chi or ki or prana in the East. Just as we have an electromagnetic spectrum, so we have an identifiable spectrum of all of these dynamic forces that can affect life energy and affect consciousness, but are too subtle to be picked up by standard electromagnetic equipment. And within that, Dr. Karim is able to demonstrate that these types of subtle energies that affect all living beings can manifest themselves in all these different scales of quality. And what he means by scales of quality is, for instance, the scale of color, that all the different vibratory forces can express themselves at one particular octave or level as the complete spectrum of color, or the exact same spectrum of vital energy can express itself in the complete spectrum of sound, or the complete spectrum of angles, or of number sequences, or of shapes. And so what we see in cymatics is a particular demonstration of the translation of sound into shape. But following up this concept in biogeometry, you can actually translate the vibratory force of any sound, or any shape, or any angle, or any proportion, or whatever you're working with, into any of the other scales of quality. Translate sound to shape, to angle, to proportion, to color, any of these things. Just like the angle of refraction of white light in a prism, the angle of refraction will determine the color that is produced. And so that's a translation of angle into color. And once we have that as an understanding, along with this complete spectrum of all of these vital forces that affect living beings, we now have an opportunity to have a science that allows us to be extremely specific about all of the energies that affect living beings and to work with it in a very conscious way.
So the process of developing and understanding the specific item for the specific result, was that developed through just trial and error, and or was there some sense of looking at, say, what you wanted to affect, the part or the cell or whatever, looking at this, the thing that you're trying to affect with a certain geometry? How are you finding what geometry it is that you need to use to affect that part? Did I make any sense there?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And let me provide a little more background, and that'll take us right to answering the question. So with the work that we teach with biogeometry, biogeometry is based in Egypt, but it's really a universal science that applies to the inner knowledge of every tradition. Part of it, as I mentioned, is understanding that there is an identifiable spectrum so that we can do spectrum analysis of these subtle energies, these life forces that, again, are called chi or ki or prana in classical traditions, and that very strongly affect the living functions in all living beings. And to look at the background of that, this is the sort of thing that was taught within the closed initiation systems of many different initiation schools of the past, many different spiritual traditions. But there is something that happened around the year 1900 that unfortunately is very little known in North America, but it was an amazing event I'd like to say something about, which was that the knowledge from the old Egyptian temples of how you work with vibratory forces and how that translates into geometry, like the geometry of the Egyptian temples and many other things done in ancient Egypt that are not well known to the public, that information went in different directions. You find some of it in the Jewish Kabbalah. You find some of it from the old Greek Pythagorean teachings. And then it goes into Europe. And as you follow it over time, one way that it manifested was within the dominant religious institution in Europe for a very long period of time, which was the Catholic Church. And within the Catholic Church, one of the branches of it that really cultivated esoteric studies was, of course, the Jesuit order. Around the year 1900, there were particular Jesuit-trained French priests who began to write texts and to speak publicly about things they had learned from the Jesuits that allowed them to do various types of energetic testing. The type of energy testing that these Jesuit-trained French-speaking priests in France and Switzerland were involved in is connected to what we think of today as dowsing. But usually when we say the term dowsing today in North America, people think of a form of mental dowsing. So that if you go to an average dowsing association in North America today and ask to be taught dowsing, one of the first things they'll normally show you is they'll give you a pendulum. And they'll teach you a system of asking mental questions. And the answer to the mental question will come with the movement of the pendulum in a particular way to indicate yes or no or something of that kind.
Right.
That's one part of mental dowsing. But what the Jesuit-trained French priests were doing was something completely different. They also used pendulums, but they used them in a very different way. And they ended up calling their system in France physical radiesthesia. So that what they meant by this is that the term radiesthesia means a sensitivity to radiation. And this ability to pick up subtle radiations that most people could never perceive. So, for instance, when the French began to release their information, they would talk about, for instance, the personal wavelength of a person, that you could test any person's energy field through getting a pendulum and calibrating the string length on the pendulum as if it was finding a musical note on a musical string. And a particular length of string on the pendulum held over the person's energetic field or a witness of their body, such as hair or blood or saliva, the pendulum would feel like something was pulling it, and it would start immediately swinging in a clockwise rotation. And so you could actually calibrate the string length of the pendulum to pick up a particular vibratory field, and essentially the string length calibrated to a wavelength or a particular harmonic of a wavelength.
Wow.
And so this was a release to the public of information that had been held secret up until that time within particular closed systems. And so, for example, one book that appeared in France at that time was called The Radiesthesia of the Missionaries. That was in French, but that was the translated title. And The Radiesthesia of the Missionaries described the way that the Jesuits would train missionaries being sent to far-off lands and to be able to use this type of radiesthesia, to use pendulums and things of that kind in a completely vibrational way, not asking any mental questions, very different from how it's done today in North America, but to test pure vibrations. And in so doing, and they went to, let's say, some island to convert the islanders, they would be able to do something very practical with that. So using this type of physical radiesthesia, they could find what water was drinkable and what water was not drinkable. They could find the sources of the water and how far underground it was. they could differentiate whether particular natural vegetation was toxic or whether it was edible. And they could make themselves very useful to the local people, because if somebody got sick, they could then determine what particular local plants would be healing for that particular illness. Because as you take this type of radiesthesia further, you can then go beyond simply calibrating the string length, and you can begin to identify very specific energetic qualities, and you can find what things strengthen not just the entire human energetic field or weaken it, but you can find what particular vibrations or substances will strengthen or counteract any type of illness or problem held anywhere in the body. And so once this information was released in France, then people who were not part of the Catholic Church hierarchy began to pick it up and practice it. Now, around 1900 was the time that we had this huge explosion of electrical engineering become public, and we began to electrify the planet with electrification grids. And you also had the mass spread of radio wave technology and the start of radio for entertainment and that sort of thing. So one of the people that picked up this thread was a radio engineer in France whose name was Louis Turin. And Louis Turin was a professor of engineering, and he taught radio wave technology to the French military around the time after World War I. And so what he realized is that this information that was being released by the Jesuit-trained French priest allowed him to fill in some gaps of modern science and modern electromagnetic theory, because he knew that there were subtle radiations around us all the time that are invisible to us, but that affect living beings. Just like with what he taught people in radio wave technology, there are invisible radiations that you don't know are there until you tune a crystal in a device so that it can actually pick up the frequency, and now you can hear the radio broadcast. But he knew that this went way beyond radio. And he knew that our electromagnetic equipment only picks up a very gross level of energetic broadcast. In fact, Nikola Tesla, who developed the modern alternating current electrical system we use in all of our homes and offices today, he called the type of electricity that we're using retarded Hertzian waves, retarded electrical waves, because they were slower than the speed of light, and that there were other types of waves out there that were different and had very different properties. So what Turin did is he then began to do research combining modern knowledge of physics and radio wave technology with the type of subtle energy detection of radiesthesia coming from the Jesuit-trained French priest, and he was able to identify the spectrum or the different bands of vibrational energy that affected living beings but could not be picked up by electromagnetic equipment, and that had profound effects on all living things. And so he wrote a whole series of books starting in 1931 and going into the early 1950s, books that are almost unknown today, unfortunately, although we've collected them and we've started to translate them into English, that reveal all of his research into identifying the spectrum of energy and ways that it can be detected, and also looking at backward engineering the types of artifacts left behind from ancient Egypt and China and other cultures to see the way that they were actually created, engineered, to create very specific vibratory forces for practical application. And so this leads us to the answer to your question. How do you determine what geometry, or it could be a shape, it could be a color, it could be a sound, it could be an angle, it could be a proportion, it could be a number sequence, it could be any number of things, but the qualitative energy that will correct a system within a living being is actually based on this whole system of radiesthesia. Dr. Karim had actually been trained in the early 70s by a medical doctor in Egypt, who was actually a Coptic Christian, who had learned this French method of radiesthesia to be able to empirically test different vibrations. And he could test his patients this way. And the French called this system medical radiesthesia. In fact, at one time, before World War II, there were hundreds of medical doctors in France who used medical radiesthesia all the time. They would get a vibrational sample of a person, like a sample of blood or saliva or hair, and they would use an anatomy chart to have the correct shape information of the parts of the human body, and using the vibrational witness along with the anatomy chart, they could actually detect where any imbalance was in the body. And then they could detect, using the system, what particular homeopathic medicine, herb, pharmaceutical, anything that would then create a correction vibrationally within that part of the body. So this particular medical doctor in Egypt was one of the people that initiated Dr. Kalim into this type of knowledge in the early 1970s, at the time that Dr. Kalim, as a young architect in Egypt, was also working with a man named Dr. Fawzi Solomon, who ran the Museum of Ancient Egyptian Medicine and was teaching Dr. Kalim a number of other remarkable things, introducing him to a whole range of energetic researchers in the Middle East. So it's through this type of vibrational testing that we can know, and that Dr. Kalim knew, how he could then test for what specific geometry or, again, color, sound, really anything qualitative, that would create a vibrational effect to correct something going on in the body.
Wow.
And that then led to a whole series of projects that Dr. Kalim did that we can get into if you like, that he was able to demonstrate in medical facilities and research facilities the way that these types of subtle energies will directly affect living beings.
Yeah, I've used a dowsing pendulum for quite a few years, and I never thought about the length of the string having much effect, but it always works better when I have about 6 or 7 inches of string. And then when I change to different lengths, I get different results from it. That never crossed my mind. So there is still a very, very much a consciousness aspect to this as far as whoever is doing the radiophysia is asking for a plus or minus or a yes or a no on, is this plant the proper plant to cure this illness type thing, correct?
Well, actually, it's a bit different. Again, in North America today, we normally practice mental dowsing, where we get answers based on mental questions. But this method that the Jesuit-trained French priests knew and that they then passed on to the public actually goes back to the old Egyptian temple science. And it is actually doesn't involve, except at a very specific branch of it, asking any mental questions. So they're not asking the question. What they're doing actually is through particular practices, they tune in very specifically to a vibrational field. And tuning into the vibrational field, they can find if there's an energetic disturbance in it or not. And then connecting simultaneously to another vibrational field, they can see if that secondary vibrational field corrects the living system or not. And this is indicated by particular motions of the pendulum in some cases. There are other methods as well, but that's the basic idea. So it's, again, a system that is not well known at all in North America, and it's quite different from mental dowsing. So they don't ask any mental questions. It's simply a matter of tuning in to the vibrational fields, seeing what's happening in the field, and then seeing the things that will strengthen it and bringing it up to full resonance.
Wow.
How is that? 'Cause this sounds the same as, for example, some people who trained themselves are able to see auras and can see, you know, like, okay, something is wrong with you energetically, and they can tell you, like, okay, you know, your energy is kind of off here by your kidney or in this side of your head.
Right.
Would that be the same thing, but just using a different instrument?
In a sense. When people are doing the practice that you're speaking of with medical intuition, they are developing the potential powers within the subtle energy centers of the body, primarily at the third eye center, but other centers can be involved as well. And that again takes us back to the great spiritual traditions where they would train people to activate these latent powers or potentials within the different energy centers and to structure their energy body to do practices to perceive things that are invisible to most people. The type of vibrational radiesthesia, vibrational energy testing that we're talking about here that's done in biogeometry and goes back to practices of the ancient spiritual traditions, including in ancient Egypt, this is also a method that uses the human energy system to do the detection. What the pendulum or other types of specialized radiesthesia equipment will do is it actually is an extension of the human energy field. And this is very important to understand the methods used by the Egyptians in biogeometry and using many of the ancient traditions, that when you calibrate the string length on the pendulum, let's say to the string length where you'll get the strongest clockwise reaction over a person's energy field when you're at that string length, then in doing so, the person using it actually feels that the extension of the string is an extension of their own energy field. It's like an antenna connected to their field. So what the pendulum or the radiesthesia equipment really is a type of focusing device. It allows you to focus on one specific vibration out of the complete ocean of vibration that we're in all the time. So what the radiesthesia equipment really does, it doesn't do it by itself. It's used in conjunction with our human energy field to allow us to tune our attention to just one very specific vibratory quality using principles of resonance and harmonics and wavelength. And then the person can start picking up that one invisible vibration. After they've done that for a while, they can start identifying specific vibrations within this complete spectrum of all living energies. And the more that you do that, the more you start entraining yourself to perceive it, even without the pendulum or the radiesthesia equipment. And so it has a somewhat similar result, so that the equipment is really a type of focusing device, so that we focus on just that one vibration and don't get carried off with a bunch of mental chatter that allows us to get lost in the fog of all the different vibrations around us.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand it. So, for example, if I have, let's say, a sprained ankle, and I get the energy pattern for it, and I know exactly what you're talking about. It almost feels like a magnetic pull, correct?
Yes.
So I would get that same kind of feeling if I, let's say I have a bunch of plants and herbs, and then I'll just pick one, let's say parsley, and then I'll feel the exact same pull, and then I'll know that parsley is good for the sprained ankle, for example?
There's numerous different techniques. To give you a concrete sense of it, let me tell you two specific techniques. So in one particular one, I would use this very fundamental method used by the French in medical radiesthesia, which I mentioned, of calibrating the string length on the pendulum to a particular string length. So I'm holding the string on the pendulum in my hand, and these pendulums tend to have much longer strings than those that are used for mental dowsing. And so they start moving the pendulum in a straight back and forth direction over whatever it is that they're testing. It could be directly over a person's body, could be a photograph of them, could be a sample of blood or saliva, something that has their vibrational trace in it. And once the string length gets to a particular point, then they'll be what the Egyptians call feeling the pull. It'll feel like something is pulling the pendulum into a clockwise rotation, and it can be very, very strong. And at that point, you've calibrated to the string length for the energy system that you're testing. So let's say I've done that for a person's body. Then, if I connect at that string length to a particular subsystem of their body, in this case, let's say it's a sprained ankle. It could be an internal organ, but for this case, it'll be the sprained ankle. And if the sprained ankle has some type of disturbance to its energy field, what will happen is you'll immediately see this clockwise spin slow down. And if it's been very seriously injured or has a disease process, you'll actually have it reverse into a counterclockwise spin.
Wow.
At that point of seeing it reverse into a counterclockwise spin, and again, all this is done without asking any mental questions. It happens automatically at a vibrational level. Once you see it move into the counterclockwise spin, then you can look for things that may correct it. So maybe I've got four different types of herbal salve in front of me that are supposed to correct these types of things. And again, with my pendulum held at the same point for the maximum clockwise spin in their field, but now connected to their ankle, it's going counterclockwise, I can then put my hand over one at a time the different herbal salves and see to what degree that corrects the spin back into the fully strong clockwise spin that it had before. And that will then determine which one actually corrects that vibrational problem. That's one very simple technique, and it can be used for almost anything. I use that technique every day.
Wow.
And it's very powerful, very effective, and doesn't take very long to learn. A more advanced method is to actually test the vibrational quality itself. So I mentioned before that in this body of work coming from France, in the 1930s, and unfortunately almost forgotten today because World War II almost wiped this out, unfortunately. This body of research found that just as we can identify the electromagnetic spectrum, and all of our modern technology is based on identifying specific frequencies and what they do, the frequency used in your cell phone is different from the one used for your home electrical power and is different from the one used for an X-ray machine, for example. And they couldn't have that science without being able to differentiate all the parts of the electromagnetic spectrum and know what their functions are. So by the same token, having identified the complete spectrum of vital energy, which the French accomplished, and that we use today in the Egyptian biogeometry system, we developed certain instruments. There are some developed by the French, and there are some developed by Dr. Karim that are actually quite easier to use, that allow you to tune the pendulum to any of the particular bands within the spectrum. And so with that, you could actually do spectrum analysis of what's happening in a person's body or what's happening with any particular type of vibrational tool or any type of homeopathic medicine or really anything. So these two basic techniques then can be understood as, number one, the one I described to begin with, is a method to test a person's energetic field, see if it's in balance or out of balance, and if it's out of balance, what thing will correct it to be fully strong and restored to its normal vibration. The second method that I just mentioned is the one of, we could call it vibrational spectrum analysis, and know exactly what vibrational qualities are present in any person, place, or thing. Hmm. And all the different vibrational qualities have different functions.
Hmm. Well, this is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. You'd like to be a fly on my wall tonight after we get done here, because I'm gonna be doing some little experimenting myself with my pendulum. I've been sitting here holding it over a glass of distilled water right now.
Okay.
You're definitely gonna be blowing some of our listeners' minds. Especially, there's a lot of healers in our audience.
Right.
Wow.
So what
Let me
I
just get the...
I... Huh?
Go ahead.
So what I did when I started working with Dr. Karim is that he was one of the only people I could find who really had a comprehensive knowledge of a lot of this almost lost French research, which is really a rediscovery of the knowledge of practices done in ancient temples. And he had then continued to add to it, and he had simplified a lot of practices. He had made more effective equipment. He had found a lot of safety precautions for some of the working with some of the more toxic vibrations. And he also had a complete understanding of the context it all fits in for all living forces, all living beings. And so I was just so grateful to find him because, number one, it's difficult to find people that level of knowledge. And number two, if they have it, it's often very hard to get them to like teach it in a straightforward manner. So again, I was very fortunate to find him. And after just hanging around to the point I wouldn't go away for a few years, he allowed me to start teaching his work publicly, which we do today. We got it into the standardized system where you can teach people one practice after another in a modular system. So, for example, in our biogeometry courses we teach in North America today, and we teach both in the U.S. and Canada, in the very first day, as we're telling you about all the background knowledge that you need to understand to do this work, the first practice we'll have you do is very simple, and that is, how do you detect polarity? Because everything in the natural world has a polarity to it. The two ends of a pencil, your two eyes. There are whole systems of healing that are based on nothing but polarity, like polarity therapy, because you can bring a system into balance by applying the opposite polarity to the polarity it's gone off balance toward. A system can be overactive or it can be underactive. So the first thing we do is simply show people how to calibrate the string length on a pendulum, again asking no mental questions, but simply tuning into the vibration so that you get the string length to where the pendulum held over the positive pole of a battery will spin clockwise and pick up the spiral vortex of clockwise movement at the positive pole of the battery, which is always there, but we normally can't detect it. And then if you turn the battery over to the negative pole, the pendulum will then spin counterclockwise. On the second day, we get into then testing your own energy field and finding the different string length that allows you to test the energy in your body. And then you can test any substance to see if it's strengthening or weakening to you. And this becomes a revelation for a lot of people in that a lot of very expensive supplements and things that people take actually, in many cases, aren't good for them. It can be very different from person to person what's actually beneficial for you, what you actually need. And it may not be that, you know, it's that, you know, vitamin E isn't good for me, but a particular brand of vitamin E doesn't test well for you at all, but a different brand tests very well for you. So the second day is testing that. But when we get to the third day, that's when we start testing and teach them how to do this more advanced work for where you can actually start testing the specific vibrational qualities. And this requires more specialized types of tools. Again, they're a type of pendulum, but they have very specific designs so that they pick up very specific vibrations out of the entire spectrum. And so that's when we teach them how to test a very important vibration that Dr. Kuin was the discoverer of, but we found that virtually all ancient traditions knew about it. And that is, what is the specific set of vibrations that balance all living energy systems, that bring any energy system, no matter whether it's overactive or underactive, what brings it right back to center, right back to balance? And Dr. Kareem found there are three very specific vibrations that come together as a set. It's like the mystery of the Trinity, the three is one and the one is three, that these three specific vibrations that can be picked up empirically with this type of radiesthesia equipment, that these vibrations are found in every chakra in the human body, they're found in every cell of the human body, they're found in every place in nature that a local tradition calls a sacred power spot. If a local tradition has a sacred power spot, and every native tradition is the guardian of their local area, of the power spots, those power spots, regardless of where they are in the world, will always test for these three specific vibrations. And if you test any ancient holy site where they've built a cathedral or temple, etc., before a few hundred years ago, back in the ancient world when they knew what they were doing, all those sites will test for these three specific vibrations. Because these are the three specific vibrations that higher spiritual forces or nature or whatever you want to think of it as uses to balance all living energy systems. And that is a key vibrational quality that we use in biogeometry to balance energy systems, whether they're in a human or an animal or a plant or in an environment. And another one of the vibrations we teach people to find is one of the vibrations within that complete spectrum that we talked about. And this is a particular vibration that has a carrier wave function. It's an extremely penetrating, subtle energy. It cannot be picked up by electromagnetic equipment, but it really affects all living beings. And this carrier wave of energy has both a beneficial component to it and a very detrimental component. And in that carrier wave of energy, the detrimental component is extremely dangerous. And in the ancient world, they knew how to take it out of locations and take it out of particular geometric forms that can generate it. So I'll give you a specific example here. And that is that in Egypt, of course, you see the pyramids. The pyramid form itself is actually a generator of this carrier wave energy. So when people talk about pyramid power, they've stumbled across one particular vibration out of the spectrum of all the different vibrations. And this particular vibration is one that a pure, uncorrected pyramid will have both a detrimental energetic component and a beneficial component coming through the interior and down through the base. What they did in Egypt is that they knew how to correct the form so that it took out the toxic component and amplified the beneficial. And that's why the three pyramids at Giza Plateau, if you study them, they all have a very slight half a degree indentation straight down the center of all four faces of all three major pyramids of the pyramids at Giza Plateau.
Right.
And in the ancient world, they knew when they did sacred architecture, like the classical knowledge of the great Masonic builders who built the cathedrals of Europe or the great builders of India or ancient Egypt, they knew how to work with the shape in such a way that it created specific vibrations that would enhance and develop human consciousness, that would enhance the human energetic field, and they knew how to take out the toxic components. But unfortunately, that got lost. And so by the third day, we're showing people how to be able to test those vibrational ranges, make the connections, and make corrective efforts to the things in their environment. Because now you can, for the first time, directly test all the different vibrations and know exactly what you're dealing with.
Wow, this is some fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and
we are approaching the top of the hour here, so I want to give you an opportunity to Let us know something about your classes. How can people get a hold of you, and where can they contact you, and what have you got coming up here in the near future?
Oh, thank you. We have a website, which is www.vesica.org, and Vesica is V as in Victor, E-S-I-C-A. Vesica is a specific geometric form. So vesica.org is one website. Also, Dr. Karim's own website in Egypt is simply biogeometry.com, and it's got a lot of good information, too. So at our site in North America, which is vesica.org, we have information about our upcoming biogeometry classes. We have a foundation training coming up in Toronto in early May, and we have a foundation training for the U.S. coming up in North Carolina, happening in July. And that will be followed by an advanced training in the U.S. happening in August. We also, when Dr. Karim comes to North America, we have him come to teach special topic classes with brand new information that he's just coming out with. And that's open to people who have completed the foundation and advanced trainings.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, well, we're going to sign off the first hour here, and we will continue this fascinating conversation in the second hour. I'd like everybody to hang around and listen to Dr. Brooks Agnew after us, and then pop on over to the members section and listen to hour two with Dr. Robert Gilbert. And wow, this one is definitely got my gears going. So, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance.
The love you deny is the pain you carry.
And we'll see you guys on the flip side.
Get down on my knees and pray that.